We are continuing our series this summer called Held in Trust, where we're talking about faith, money, and generosity. Last week, Brian took a hiatus and did his own thing. He was a rebel, but we're getting back on track. For those of you I don't know, my name is John Adrian. I serve as a deacon here at the church and been on the business team for a number of years. I am a certified public accountant. I work for the university, doing a lot of budgeting, planning, money stuff there. So a lot of my work revolves around finance. So when Les was trying to get people to sign up to teach this, I couldn't hide anywhere. Had to step up and picked a really thrilling topic: emergency funds and savings. So if you prefer to get coffee and hang out in the lobby, you're welcome to do that too. But yeah, a few disclaimers. Because of the perhaps boring topic, I don't think I want to talk or you want to hear about this for a full 40-ish minutes, but we'll give it our best shot, but we might finish early. Also, I didn't go to seminary, not a Bible scholar, nor am I a financial advisor, so I might have to defer or refer your questions to someone else. I also have only taught four and five-year-old Sunday school, so this is a leap up for me. Clint kicked us off a couple weeks ago and just kind of laid the foundation, which I'll kind of revisit here as well. And then Alan Grafton, I was not here for that, but he talked about budgeting and zero-based budgeting. I heard it was good. We took a break last week, and now we're here on week four. So I was thinking about this series and talking to some folks about it, and there was, you know, some questions around, like, why are we talking about this at church? Like, isn't this something, again, you can talk to a financial advisor about or watch a YouTube video, or, you know, why is this something that's important for us as a church body to talk about? And I, you know, was really digging into some of Jesus's teachings, particularly on the Sermon on the Mount, and was zeroing in on that, you know, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And really comes down to, it's not necessarily about being a better money manager or, you know, saving the right amount or giving the right amount, or it's really about where your heart is in dealing with money. And I think you can't quite see it at the bottom there, but according to the internet, 11 of 39 of Jesus's parables were about money or possessions. So over 25% of them were talking about money. So it's probably something we should talk about too. And I think that's because it can become one of, if not the biggest rival in our hearts to Jesus. So I've got a quick, like, 5-minute video from the Bible Project that is part of this Sermon on the Mount series that I had studied a while back, and I thought it would say this a little bit better than I could, Tim Mackey and John Collins. So about halfway through, John Collins asks Tim, you know, so yes, we should be generous, but shouldn't we be saving too? And I think his answer really hits home. So we'll watch that real quick and we'll jump back in. All right. So about halfway through, he asked, well, shouldn't I be generous and store up some land stuff? I think that's what they call it. And he said, you know, Jesus, his real point here is that he's concerned about what kind of people we're becoming if that's what our, you know, our main focus is in life, is building wealth and storing up. So with this heart issue in mind, that's the video we watched, we're gonna jump into the topic for this week of emergency saving and overall savings. So to keep Clint's foundation that he started a couple weeks ago, and to kind of keep this as a under current, a foundation for what we're talking about here, I think intellectually we all, you know and say that God created everything, and everything that is on the earth is His. Everything comes from you. We have given you only what comes from your hand. All of these things about us being managers or stewards or trustees of what is actually God's. I feel like I know that and can say that, but do I actually live that way? That is a different story. So I think keeping that in mind as we go through this. I might get in trouble for quoting Jason Isbell at church, but I heard one of my favorite songs, Ride to Roberts, he says, "The deepest ditches line the righteous path." And in trying to think about a sort of a way to think about wise saving and how we can fall off on either side, it painted a good picture. So wise saving being in the middle, we're going to look at an example from the Bible from each of these. So you can fall off in one ditch as a foolish spender. You can fall off in another ditch as a hoarder. And both of those sort of ways you're falling off really get down to where your trust is. So we will jump into the foolish spender. So probably all are familiar with the prodigal son parable, and I know that a lot of us have been influenced by Tim Keller's work on that. About it's really about the older brother, but I think it's fair to talk about the younger brother as well, and as a great example of how he took his inheritance and went off and squandered it. And just a couple things to point out, like he treated his inheritance as his own. It wasn't like it was a gift that he was supposed to steward. You know, no real planning for tomorrow. And also just not really thinking about other people, you know, he spent it all on himself. And I think that's something that we'll get back to multiple times about why we save, you know, to bless others instead of just for ourselves. And then back to this whole misplaced trust issue. So I think falling off the ditch into a foolish spending habit or into a hoarding habit is both a lack of trust in God. I'll give a quick example, a personal example. There's no better way to fall into a foolish spending habit than get your first credit card. And when I was out of college, I'd spent 5 years studying accounting, had passed the CPA exam, had a job at the Big Four firm, and you know, everything was great. I got my first credit card, and I can vividly remember the first time I was looking at the statement balance and then looking at my bank account and going, I'm not gonna be able to pay this. And then you fall into the trap of, well, I'll just do the minimum, and then it's so hard to catch up after that. So just an example of you know, not thinking wisely. And I think the other piece I want to point out as we go through this is the Bible's not going to specifically tell us save this amount or set up this fund. So it really is a wisdom issue that you need to think through and talk with people and have you know, folks in your life that have been through it and can help you set up good practices. All right, so the wise saver, the righteous path, so to speak. The story about Joseph in Egypt. So just, I'm sure most of you know, he was sold into slavery by his brothers. He's living, you know, in basically a slave in prison. Pharaoh has this dream where seven cows come out of the Nile River, and there's seven that are healthy and fat, and then right after that, seven more come out that are skinny and weak. And the skinny ones eat the big ones. And then he has another dream about, I think it's like heads of grain. So some healthy grain comes up, and then some unhealthy comes up, and it swallows the healthy. So he's asking his advisors, can someone interpret this dream? They say, well, there's this Hebrew guy, Joseph, who has interpreted dreams. So they bring Joseph up. And the first thing I noticed about this in relation to what we're talking about today is Pharaoh asked Joseph, can you interpret my dream? And his response is, I can't, but God can. And I think that frames where Joseph's heart was, and we start thinking about, like, do we truly believe that everything we have, not just our resources, but our skills, our abilities, are those truly, you know, given from God, or is it something that we did ourselves? So from the bat, right off the bat, Joseph says, you know, God can do this, I can't. So then he interprets the dream that there's going to be 7 years of abundance, then there's going to be 7 years of famine, and they ask him, well, what should we do? And he says, why don't we save 20% or one-fifth of the harvest for the next 7 years, and then when the famine hits, we will be in good shape to serve our people and get through the famine. So a couple of thoughts about, you know, why is this in the righteous path? Why is it wise? Why is he the wise saver? One, he's not doing this out of anxiety or fear. It's not that he's not trusting God. He's doing it because it's a reality that he sees coming, and God has helped him to see coming. And so he's planning it out, setting it aside, and it'll be there when they need it. The other thing that is really interesting about this, I think, is, or why it's such a great example, is because when the famine actually comes, they're able to use this savings to save, I don't know how many people. I mean, it says people all over the world were coming to Egypt because there was a, you know, large famine. So they're able to bless people through their savings, which I think is one key we need to think about when we're considering this. And then the other really cool thing, or at least I thought, was through his wise savings, he was able to be reconciled with his family. If you remember, his brothers come to get some grain because they're in the famine too, and he's able to say, hey, it's me, you know, you sold me into slavery, but what you meant for wrong, God meant for good, or something like that. Anyway, so that's the model that we're trying to emulate or to focus on. All right, so the other side, the other ditch on the right-hand side, the hoarder. This is a parable Jesus told in Luke 12. And essentially there's a guy, he says, that has this really rich land and it's producing a great harvest. And he says, well, I'm going to build more barns and tear down the little ones and build huge ones, and I'm going to pack the barns with all this great harvest that I have. And God says, you fool, you know, this very night your life will be demanded of you. And then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? So it's kind of a challenging one to think about too, when you think about how we're living, and, you know, why should we save if we don't know what is coming tomorrow? But I think this story is illustrates this hoarding mentality, because this rich man was not doing it to he wasn't doing it with a purpose necessarily, other than for himself. He wasn't doing it to bless other people. He was trusting, again, in himself and in his land and his ability, and not trusting in God. So I can tell another personal story when I fell off into this ditch, or maybe I'm still in this ditch. About 6 or 7 years ago, I was like, I'm gonna save some money so Elizabeth and I can go on a 10-year anniversary trip. So I started setting aside money and it was going into a fund. Well, we celebrated our 14th year anniversary last week and we still haven't been on that trip. And that money's still in that 10-year account. So I probably need to change the name to, 15-year anniversary trip. But part of that, I mean, thinking about my own heart is, I like that money being there, you know? It makes me feel safe, comfortable. But if I were a wise saver, I had good intentions. I set it up with a purpose, and I think it's to bless our marriage, our relationship, to go on a trip and celebrate that. But have failed. So find me next year and hold me accountable for going on the trip. So how do we stay on the righteous path? How do we stay out of the ditches? It's, as I've illustrated with myself, it's, I think it's hard. I mean, we fall back and forth between trusting in things that aren't God / spending like there's no tomorrow. But going back to the foundation of we are really, in this whole series we're going to be talking about is, we're really just trustees, we're stewards, we're managers of God's resources. So keeping that, I think that's something to remind ourselves every single day, that this stuff I have is not really mine, and we can hold things a little looser. But also, there's some practical things. There's some habits. There's these, different models, routines we can try to build to hopefully keep money in its right place, which is not above God, but below. So getting into kind of the mundane stuff here, but according to Bankrate and Federal Reserve, 43% of Americans can't cover a $1,000 emergency. 24% have no savings at all, and 60% of us are uncomfortable with our savings, which I'm sure we can all probably fall into one of these camps. And I'll also say, I meant to say this earlier, we're all in different stages of life. Some of us are retired, some of us are starting our careers or middle of our careers, and so sometimes we just can't save. We're in a phase of life where something's happened or we just can't get there. So I hope that none of this is shame-inducing or, oh gosh, I'm doing the wrong thing. I mean, this is just one way to live. And one way to try to, keep money where it should be. So the program we are using this summer, this Held in Trust, lays out three tiers of savings, which this is very similar to some of the Dave Ramsey stuff. I'm sure there's other folks who have similar models. So we'll talk about a starter emergency fund, building a full emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of your spending, and then talk about some sinking funds or savings goals. Sinking funds is kind of a weird term that I prefer. Savings goals makes more sense to me. All right, so emergency fund. This, and again, we'll say that this might not apply to everybody, but if you're younger and starting out, I think this is a really worthy goal to shoot for. If you don't like this, and this is while you still have debt. So when you think about the order of how you're doing this, this is priority number one. And the goal or the hope is that this just creates a buffer for those things that pop up that you don't have money saved for. So like our hot water heater broke last week. Weren't planning on that. You know, there's always a car battery that dies or medical bills. So this is just a, yeah, again, a buffer just to try to make sure you don't have to add more debt when those things pop up. Then as you are able to reach that in this order of operations, which we didn't talk about debt last week, but in the order of operations, you would try to, after you have the emergency fund, then you would start to try to pay off all your debt. And this particular program says everything except for your mortgage. There's probably some wisdom or some thought, and maybe if you have some other, like a car loan or something, that I don't think that should necessarily prevent you from starting to build an emergency fund. But it, certainly if you have credit card debt or any high interest debt, you would want to try to knock that out as soon as possible before you do this. So the goal here is to figure out, okay, if I spend $4,000 a month, I would like to get to 3 to 6 months of savings. And, you know, this is beyond just the you know, car battery dying or whatever. I tend to think about this more as like if you lose your income or if you have a drop in income, it's not going to create an emergency or a crisis for you. Or if you know you're in a job that you don't really love and you want to have the flexibility to take time to figure out your next move, then you might want to build, you know, towards the 6 month or longer term. And then the third tier is these sinking funds or target funds. So I talked about one with my failed 10-year anniversary vacation. But these are things that you know are going to happen. You're just not sure when. Or things that you want to do, you know, go on a trip, Christmas gifts. One of these that I personally have is my property taxes. I know they're going to be due come December. I'm going to get the bill. So I start setting them aside all year, and then I can just write the check, and it's not an emergency. I don't have to freak out. Let's see here. Here's just an easy example. If you want to buy Christmas gifts, and it's going to be $1,200, go ahead and set it aside each month, and then when Christmas comes, you don't have to. You can still pay that credit card bill. The other piece of this to mention is, you know, a lot of this personal finance stuff really is more psychological than it is like willpower or discipline. I mean, so this bottom there, it says name it, set it, and automate the transfer. At least for me, so much about meeting or reaching these goals is about automating the transfer and taking it out of your account before you even see it, and setting it in an account that is separate from your regular spending. So for these emergency funds, they recommend putting it somewhere that is accessible. Obviously, if it's an emergency, you're going to need it quickly. So don't buy a bank CD that doesn't, it's not going to come to maturity for 2 years if it's your emergency fund. But also just from the psychology standpoint, like I said, I think it's super important to just set up a separate account and have it be not in your main checking account. And you earn interest on it. So like the reason why I set up the property tax thing is I would rather earn interest on the money than have the bank escrow and earn money themselves. I don't think this is theologically probably right or quite applicable, but I was thinking about the parable of the talents in this is like when I can't remember exactly the where that is, but in the Bible, but where Jesus talks about the master who gives the talents to the servants, and one of them just buries it, and then he's rebuked because he didn't take what he had been given and actually do something with it. Probably not super applicable to this, but you might as well put it in an interest-bearing account so you earn something on it. So this is where I think just a lot of wisdom comes into play, and thinking about, you know, am I hoarding? Am I wisely saving? And I think for me, you know, back to the trust issue, you know, if I'm trying to build up this account because I'm fearful or I don't trust that God's going to provide, or if I'm doing it and it's preventing me from serving other people, blessing other people, then I'm going to fall into that hoarding ditch. But as we get into, you know, being wise with it, you know, I think having a purpose, obviously, you know, having those targeted funds sets up a purpose. It's easy. You know what you're going to use it for, and you're able to kind of live without that next emergency around the corner. So, all right. And if anybody has questions or thoughts, you know, feel free to jump in. This is, yeah, again, not the most interesting topic. But yeah, some things to consider. You know, you don't have to raise your hands, but you know, if you don't have an emergency fund, you know, what's holding you back? You know, even if you have to start with, you know, $5, $10 a month, whatever you can do. Again, Elizabeth reminded me when she was teaching right out of college, she literally, you know, she was paying rent, had a car note, and I don't know what your salary was, but it was really, I mean, pitiful. I mean, she literally could barely pay the bills. Like, saving was just a really hard thing to do. And that's just, you know, a season of life that is okay. It's not, you're not bad for not being able to do it. We just talked about kind of distinguishing wise saving from hoarding, but I think that is definitely something we should revisit frequently in our life of as we analyze our personal finances, you know, through that lens. If anybody wants to share, has ideas, or you can think about it as you leave, but, you know, what are some goals you might have? You know, what are some ways you could set up a savings goal from a wise saving standpoint? Yes, Harry. Yeah, that is a great point. I think our mortgage just flipped between paying more principal than interest recently, and I did a little celebration. But that's a great example of a sinking fund. I mean, you can use that to use your mortgage payoff as a savings goal. Thank you. Any other thoughts? Questions? That is a fantastic question that I've thought a lot about and don't have an answer. I don't know there, but I meant to hit on that. Thank you for saying that, Errol, because I think that is a huge question for us to think about with, you know, with your spouse, with your family. Like, you know, even if you were making millions of dollars, like, do you really need to spend that? I know some folks, friends of mine that have set, like, regardless of what our income is, this is our budget. And anything else is going to go, you know, we're going to give back. I know maybe it was Clint who talked about that a couple weeks ago, that he has friends like that too. I don't know. You would know better than I do. I don't know that the Bible tells us exactly the answer to that. I think it's a wisdom situation that we, you know, have to work through. Anybody have a good way to process enough? Yeah, that's a great point, Eric. In thinking about your emergency fund too, like 3 to 6 months of expenses, part of that, at least for me, I've done this like exercise of like, okay, if I lost my job tomorrow and I, you know, what could I cut my budget to be the bare minimum to have food, shelter, you know, healthcare. So it is interesting to go through and look at your expenses to say, is this necessary? Would I need this if I was in an emergency situation? And kind of get to a bare bones budget. And yeah, watching your recurring expenses, particularly those recurring subscriptions that we all forget about. Yeah, that's good. One other thing I wanted to mention, because I think we're almost out of time. You know, the church, you know, God gave us the church and to bless us, and there's so many great things about this body. And one thing, you know, we're all in different phases of life, different stages of life, have different circumstances that you can't control. And I think it's such a great opportunity and a joyful thing when the church can actually help its members, even if it's financially. So just, you know, if you're in a situation, even if you had an emergency fund and then, you know, two things hit that you weren't expecting, you know, the church should be a place where you can come to get help. And I can say from being on the business team, like there's a line in the church budget, and Tripp can speak to this, that's called member care. And I don't think there's, at least for me, there's nothing that I would rather spend money on than serving our church body. So, you know, in all of this, you know, the church shouldn't be your permanent emergency fund necessarily. But, you know, we all have things we can't control, and it would be a great thing for the church to serve that role. Time's up. Okay. Any last thoughts, questions? Yes, Juan. I think like the Dave Ramseys of the world and others like that are going to say credit cards are evil. Don't use credit cards. But I personally, you know, experienced having that first credit card and not fully understanding how it was going to work. This is probably not the right answer, but this is what I'm going to say. I mean, you can get so many benefits from a credit card, not only from your building your credit, but also points and all that stuff. And you're paying for it when you swipe your card, or, you know, I mean, the businesses and the credit card companies are clearly making tons of money. So why not get in on that action?
It's a temptation. Yeah. You should just continue on.
Right. You have to have discipline. I mean, you just have to have the discipline to pay it off. And I mean, I think if you're in a situation where you don't feel like if you don't have a budget, one, and you're not trying to stick to the budget, I would say probably don't use a credit card. But at some level, I do think there's some value in it. But that's yeah. But that is, I mean, a great example of we need wisdom. The Bible's not going to tell you don't use a credit card. But, you know, there are examples of, as we've seen, of foolish spending and the other side. So anyways, all right, we're done. Thank you all so much. We'll continue on next week. I think I had an exercise for you, but it's fine. Next week, Joel, I believe, is talking about retirement. So the future you is counting on the present you.